We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. Well, here's something about what's going on with One Wake. The Raleigh City Council is about to vote on a rezoning application for the biggest real estate development that Wake County has ever seen. And if the city rezones, the value of that property is going to skyrocket, and we taxpayers will grant the project significant public subsidies. Well, One Wake, we're not opposed to the project. It could very well be good for our city, but in exchange for all the benefits that the city and the county will afford the developer, we are asking for significant benefits to the community as well. Specifically, we're asking Kane Realty to address two of our three pain in Wake County issues. You know, we had those 3,000 discussions where we asked people what was painful about living in Wake County, and they are affordable housing and living wage jobs, especially for those who often get shut out of projects like these. We're also asking for careful mitigation of downstream flooding, but that's secondary. You can read the details of the petition. Kane initially made some commitments and then began to back off and waffle a bit, so we're asking the City Council to pin rezoning approval to those community benefits. Well, in the live stream notes and on the front page of our website, there's a link to the petition. We're after 600 signatures very quickly. We've got about 300 so far. So while you're sitting there right now, please click the link and you can read it and you can sign it and you can do that whole thing in about 60 seconds. Also, this Tuesday, if you get the updates from One Wake, you got an email, the meeting about the Downtown South project. It moved from Monday to Tuesday. It'll be 7 p.m. this week. Okay, let's begin our lesson, continuing taking a hit and snapping back. A little bit about being the first Sunday of Advent and this being our lesson's focus, taking a hit, snapping back. If you're new, here's what we do at Common Thread. When we find that a religious practice has lost its meaning, it seems to be kind of empty, we don't immediately throw it out. Sometimes we do. But most often, we try and break it down to its original purpose and function. We try and scrape away the meaningless parts and try and restore it so that we have one more tool to help us become better people building a better world. For years, we've done that, and Advent is no exception. For many folks, Advent is the little doors that we open for the kids leading up to Christmas, which is nice, but it's not really the purpose or function of Advent. Advent is part of an ancient annual rhythm. For much of history, each year is punctuated by feasts. In the Christian tradition, it's the feasts of Epiphany and Easter and Pentecost and Christmas, as well as several localized saint feasts. The year broken up with significant celebrations, times that we gather and eat at a time when food was often at a premium. We say special words, we sing special songs, we wear special clothes to help one another focus on big spiritual things like hope and joy, faithfulness, love. We feast and we love one another. We encourage one another. We reaffirm our commitment to one another. We celebrate. But there's a second part to that annual rhythm. Before each celebration, there has always been a time of preparation. We prepare ourselves before we celebrate with a time of introspection, a time of reflection. We set aside time for intentional spiritual practice. Before we celebrate, we create the space for shifting our perspective, for opening our eyes, for seeing something deeper and truer, accessing the interior light. Now, the most well-known of these preparatory seasons before celebration is Lent, leading up to Easter. When our tradition encourages us to give up something for Lent, that's really an oversimplification of the purpose. What we're doing is we're setting aside some weeks to break up old thought habits, to break up mindless living so that we can see with new eyes and we can elevate our perspective. So it's kind of a rhythm through the years, a little bit of a dance. We prepare and we celebrate. We prepare and we celebrate. Back and forth through all the years of our lives. And Advent is one of those seasons of reflection, preparation, before the Feast of Christmas. Used to be, we started to celebrate Christmas midnight on Christmas Eve. Then we began the feast. It would last for 12 days until Epiphany, which is January 6th, and we'd end the feast celebrating both insight and gratitude as we would remember the story of the wise men. 12 days of feasting, 12 days of remembering significant themes, 12 days of giving and practicing generosity and loving and being loved. And to get ready for those 12 days so that we could bring our best selves to them, 28 days of quiet reflection and preparation and spiritual practice. Well, Christmas is an industry now, so we don't do it that way anymore. But the purpose is still relevant. We still need a rhythm in our lives. We still need to prepare, and we still need to celebrate. It occurred to me after the fact that when I started the Facebook group to practice examine through the holidays this year, I was responding to an interior impulse, maybe because I've spent so long trying to live that rhythm, preparation and celebration. Now, admittedly, I am much better at the preparation part than I am at the celebration part. Thank God I married Denise. She knows how to celebrate. So we discovered that when we began to scrape the meaninglessness off of Advent, we discovered the rhythm of preparation and celebration. A second thing we discovered was the winter equinox, the shortest and darkest days of the year. December 25th is not Jesus' birthday. No, early in our tradition, we co-opted an already spiritual season, those darkest days of the years, and we used the Nativity story to celebrate what was already a holy time, a time to focus on hope in the darkness. Long before we lit Christmas lights or we lit Christmas candles, those days were already days for fire. They were already days to light lights. It was already about celebrating light on the darkest days of the year. And long before Christmas ham or eggnog, we ate special foods. Again, back when any food was a treat. And we wore special clothes, and we said special words, and we gathered together there in the dark to encourage one another to hope. Hope in the darkness. When the winter stores were running low, when the specter of illness was its most fierce, when we worried that the baby wouldn't make it through the winter or that Grandpa wouldn't see another spring, we gathered to love one another and to light fires and to say words and to stir one another to hope. Keep that in mind if you drive around, as many will do this year, looking for Christmas lights. Now, the Nativity story works quite nicely. Hope in the darkness, it's that kind of story. Love and joy and peace and hope wrapped up in that story. The Feast of Christmas, and that celebration comes on the heel of 4 weeks of preparation, 4 weeks in which we stir ourselves to see what our brain bias tends to obscure. 28 days reflecting on those big human themes of love and joy and peace and hope. Now, our tradition has been doing what we did in our guided reflection this morning, stirring ourselves to hope for a long, long time. It's a time to broaden our field of vision and to see beyond our habitual thoughts, our fear habitual thoughts, our anxiety habitual thoughts, our resentment habitual thoughts. It's a time to see beyond our habits of animosity or dissatisfaction or worry. We elevate our eyes to see something bigger, something truer, something loftier. And it is dark this year. This has been a very challenging year, and right now there are 2,000 Americans dying every day of this virus. PBS NewsHour does an in memoriam segment every Friday, stories of five people who have died to the virus. I often weep during that segment, seeing families that have been gutted, loss and grief all around us. And the numbers are exploding right now. Hospitals reaching capacity, disinformation and virus fatigue accelerating the numbers, and 10 million of us still out of work, many so far behind in our rent that eviction is right around the corner. And we've seen an erosion of democracy that we thought could never happen here, but it has happened here. So this year, more than many years, we can feel the visceral connection to our ancient past, back when things were much more frightening than they are for us living in the times that we do. And we can feel the visceral connection to the purpose and function of Advent and the Feast of Christmas, the need to find light in the darkness, our need to develop our capacity to take a hit and snap back, to be our best selves in the dark times, so that we can bring our best selves and participate together in repairing what has been broken and getting through the dark times. We need to find hope there in the darkness. Now, in the first 2 weeks of this lesson, we talked about two important tools for doing that. Two important tools for being able to take a hit and snap back. Gratitude, seeing the bigger picture, bigger than our evolutionary bias in our heads, and the importance of together, the strength that we are afforded when we are not in the darkness alone. Just before we went into quarantine, I had asked Beth McMillan to do one of the graphics that she does so well for and to do one for the lobby. And then, immediately, as soon as it came back in the mail, nobody was there in the lobby. It's the thing that we say all the time. We find the divine better together than we do alone. She did that. I thought it was really nice. When we come back, it'll be there, sitting in the lobby. Now, Beth was one of the folks that I asked this week, how do you find light in the darkness? Now, when I asked folks, I made it a purposely vague question. I wasn't after anything in particular. I wanted to hear what was bubbling up for people. And Beth sent me a blog post that she did some time ago in the aftermath of a very painful miscarriage. I asked if it would be okay to share the post. It was about Hanukkah. And in the post, she said that she'd been making Christmas music CDs as gifts, and her boss, who was Jewish, she didn't make Christmas gifts. She made a Hanukkah CD for him. Not being Jewish, she didn't know much Hanukkah music, so she did some exploring, and she said she really enjoyed the songs that she found at first because they were new and different. But as she listened more deeply, she realized that there was something in the Hanukkah story that touched her in a way that that year, the Christmas story couldn't touch her. Denise and I had a late miscarriage early in our marriage, and it surprised us, it surprised me especially, how deeply it hurt. The concept of miscarriage was just that. It was a vague notion, a concept, until we experienced it. It hurt much more than I would have imagined. So as I was reading Beth's story, it evoked touching memories. Denise and I sitting together weeping on the floor in our first little apartment. Anyway, her blog post was about processing her pain, and in it she said, Hanukkah, the story of Hanukkah helped her more than Christmas was able to help her that year. Different stories, she said, celebrating different things, but one more relevant to her in that moment. Christmas, she said, tells a big story, a cosmic story of hope. The arc of the universe is bending toward hope and the promise of justice and the promise of peace and the promise of awakening from a long-deferred hope. But, she said, that story was just too big for me. It's too much for me to take in, too big for me to be able to receive. My heart was just too tender. It's like Christmas, she said, is the sun rising, but I'm sitting in a blacked out room and the sunlight is too much. It's blinding. It hurts my eyes. I needed less light, more like a candle than the sun. A candle That's about all I could handle. And so in the post, she recapped the Hanukkah story. Yet another foreign invader takes over Israel, makes it illegal to practice their religion. A handful of Jews, the Maccabees, facing demise, fighting back. So there they are, holding out against the attack. And, insult to injury, the invaders had depurified all the ceremonial oil to burn light in the temple. But they found one jar that had not been defiled, that had been overlooked. It was only enough to burn for a single day, but miraculously, it lasted for 8 days. And that gave them the time they needed to purify more oil according to their religious laws. So, Beth said in the post, that was a story I could absorb. I could feel myself like the Maccabees facing my demise. I did not have what I needed to deal with life. And it had been that way for a long, long time. I felt like they must have felt. I felt overwhelmed. I felt oppressed. If I was going to prevail, it wasn't going to be because I was strong, because I wasn't strong. I needed a divine moment, something greater than my own strength, because I didn't have any. I didn't have any strength. I needed something more than I usually depend on. And the Hanukkah story, it pointed me to that. A sliver of light that gave me hope that I was able to receive there in the darkness. Just a little light, just a little hope. But it whispered to me, hold on. On the days that feel like more than you can take, hold on. On the days when it feels like you won't possibly make it, hold on. Listen to this from her post. There are days when I feel my hope should have dried up a week ago, but somehow it's still going. I don't know how, but it's there. I found one little jar of hope untouched by sorrow, and it's keeping me going against all odds. Hope in the darkness. It's there. It's in us. And when the tools that we have long depended upon to make it in the world, what we often call the ego self or the ego tools, when life's subsidies get stripped away and we are in the darkness, that's when we finally see that those tools were never enough anyway. When that happens, that's not the death of hope, no. It's actually the invitation to discover the trueness of the hope that indwells us. That is the invitation to discover an inner reality that is bigger than circumstances, bigger than the tools that we usually use to prop ourselves up. When everything gets stripped away, many, many, many are the generations who have gone before us that testify, that's when we finally get it. What generations of ancients gathered each equinox to celebrate and to sing and to encourage and to help one another find is hope that exists even in the darkness. Now, for a lot of folks that I've talked to, probably you too, the ego tools that we've been using, they have not been up to the task of the pain that we have felt in 2020. But again, that's okay. They were not really enough for 2019 or 2018. They were always inadequate. We just couldn't see that that was the case. It's only when we are fully spent, it's only when we are fully exhausted and when we cannot find hope, that's when we look beyond our ego tools. And it's only then, in the state of constant upheaval, like being constantly on guard against germs or constantly worried about who we can talk to or what we can say when we do talk or who we have to avoid and what we have to avoid saying. It's only when we can't access hope using the old tools that we realize they were never enough anyway. It is in desperation, the stripping away of false selves, that we actually find, that we actually discover what is also true. Hope was always in there. Hope just is. Hope resides in you and in me. And so, I invite you to welcome your chronic tiredness this year, your stress-related headaches and body aches, the fuzzy brain and the poor concentration and the moodiness and the irritability and the trouble sleeping or too much sleeping. I invite you to welcome digestive troubles or overeating or too much alcohol. Welcome. Because the experience of those gone before us is that they are not the only guests that we can invite to our tables. We can also invite hope. Hope is there, ready to come. Now, keep in mind the many ways that we've talked about how we make the invitation. How do we invite hope? Get out in the woods, remember that. Sit by some water. Feel the wind. Pick up journaling again. Practice examine or the welcoming prayer or mindfulness meditation. Be together, be together, be together. Talk about your soul with spiritual friends. Talk about your growing edge, which often masquerades as hopelessness. Talk about it with one another. Do some yoga. Practice gratitude. Listen to some music. Practice self-care. Work the circle. Hope is in there. Hope is in us. And sometimes we can access Christmas magnitude hope, big cosmic stuff. And sometimes we can access Hanukkah magnitude hope, a small candle that just keeps burning in the dark. Hope is in there, and hope is one of the most powerful ways we take the hits that life always throws at us and snap back. And so, indwelling divine, may it be so in us. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings. And as you do that, remember what I say all the time. Spiritual community is a great place to invest. I especially hope that you are investing your love and your time in reaching out one to another, because community is the return on investment. And the love and the time and the energy and the dollars that it takes to make ours a healthy community. If you get to keep your job during this pandemic, please keep donating. You can donate at the top of our website. There's a donate button there. And while you're doing that, tell me, what are you thinking about? What is stirring up in your hearts? And Gene, what are folks thinking about?
So there is, Angie said, We do well when we remember in this data-driven world the power of the story. Mm-hmm. And then she goes on to say, it's why I think we see a flourishing of interest in history as we age, but it's really unfortunate that the last time we really set any intentional time out to study that history was probably when we were 16.
Sitting in Angie's class. Yeah, I have sent out, I think I probably sent out 15 or 20 requests for people to tell me how they find hope in the darkness. And mostly what I got back was stories. It was stories of, I think one of them, Angie might have been the one who responded this. When I hear the stories of people who went through the Depression, when I hear the stories of people who went through World War II, when I hear the stories of people who have gone through and come out the other side of great tragedy, I am stirred to hope. There's a text in one of our scriptures that says that we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, those who have gone before us. In other traditions, there's a great emphasis on the ancestors and being observed by the ancestors. Those who have gone before us speak to a deep resonating part of what is already inside us. And when we see them access hope in the darkness, it triggers us, it stimulates us to go look within ourselves. And sure enough, generation after generation, we find what we look for. A couple of the people said, you know, my mother used to tell me, or my grandmother used to tell me all the time, this too shall pass. And I've been hanging on to that because there was an episode in which this too did pass, and this will pass. So the day of light will return. The other equinox, the springtime equinox, will return some June 12th, 20th, something like that. The days will be long again. The light will be there again. That's true. But rather than just holding out and waiting for that day, the question that's relevant to us is, how do we practice now here in the dark? Because this is what transforms us. This is what changes us. The reference you may have heard from the spiritual tradition, the dark night of the soul. It is about those times when all the subsidies are stripped away, and in their stripped awayness, we are forced to dig deeply. And if we do, we find what we look for. And one of the things that we find is we find hope. It is there. And then it will be there when the light returns. It will be there. We have found it. You can't unsee something you've seen. You can forget it, but you can't unsee it. What else are folks talking about?
So Chris Thompson says, I wonder if hope is possible in being alone. Being alone can make us feel like our pains are unique. I think you, Doug, make a really good point about getting out and getting with people, albeit digitally.
Or socially distancedly. My wife is part of a book club, and they meet on a porch, and they've been doing it for a long time. And she went out and bought one of these huge, massive hoodies. It's filled with sheepskin on the inside. It's got these big pockets on the front. It's got this hood that comes over. It makes her look like a refrigerator. I mean, this thing is massive. And she bought that thing, and she wears that thing so that she can sit on the porch and talk with people about her soul. And may I encourage you to do that, something like that. Zoom also good. Yes, thank you, Chris.
So Sue Kempel commented and said, what a beautiful personal reflection on the Hanukkah story, Beth and Doug.
Ah, well, good. And thank you, Beth. That really was a great story. Thank you for sending that to me.
I run a little short, but I did have a thought in that, speaking to the wisdom of the ages and just chuckling at that that idea that at 18 we know all that we're ever going to know and we know everything. And as we age, we really realize how much we don't. And I just joke at the, you know, that whole idea of looking at my dad on my wedding day a few years after my 18th birthday and laughing and saying, I can't believe how much smarter you've gotten in the last few years.
All right, my friends, if you would, please put your hand on your heart and let us remember as we go that we are, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine. We've got within us what we need. The hope, it's in there. As is love and joy and courage and wisdom and discernment and the capacity to bring virtue to the fore. Everything we need is in us. And if you would extend your other hand to our city, let's look for opportunities to share what is in us with the people that we live and work and go to school with, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. God bless you. We're dismissed. Head on over to What Are You Thinking? And those of you that are newcomers, or if you'd like to meet some newcomers, please join us on that Zoom call. All right. See you next week. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.